This program is part of the Infinite Potato Alliance. Visit us at infinitepotato.com.
Isn't it about time for somebody's favorite radio program?
Attention, whoever you are, this channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Hold on to your butt.
And here we go.
From the historic Infinite Potato Studios, this is Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Join us as we dive deep into all fandoms and genres of cinema and television.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
No gatekeeping.
You shall not pass!
No toxic fandom.
A monkeys might fly out of my butt.
Now, only inches from a tall glass of Diet Mountain Dew.
Just give me something without any sugar in it, okay?
Here is your host, Sean Ray.
Sean. Shawnee, if you're feeling a little loose. Never the Sean dog, because that's just lame. And I've never been one to chase balls.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
All right, it was a miracle. Can we go now?
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast. My name is Sean Ray, and I'm waiting for the next really great idea. Like, the light bulb was such a good idea that when someone has a good idea, a light bulb goes off over their head. Nobody ever has a good idea and a squatty potty appears over their head.
I do.
Most of my ideas fall in that category. So,
yeah. Joining me in the historic Infinite Potato Studios, we have Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, but I just realized that most of my thoughts concern how can I poop easier?
And Rick is here as well.
I also am concerned that Dave needs help pooping more easily.
Are you getting enough fiber, Dave?
I don't think so.
Are you drinking enough water?
Fiber gummies are the way to go.
Fiber gummies?
Yeah.
That's a thing? Oh.
Go to CVS. They've got them.
Do they have hydrating gummies? Because I don't get enough water.
That'd be cool if you could just take a tablet and get all the water for your day. Tonight, we're going to be getting right into our topic. The name of this episode is As Seen on TV. And we're going to be talking about our favorite movies that were made for television. And streaming doesn't count because those movies can usually be theatrical or television or whatever. But these are movies that were made specifically to air on TV on one of the networks or maybe on cable television or something like that. So we'll get right into it. Dave, what is the first one that you have there on your list?
Well, I did want to ask, the sweeping miniseries, those aren't included, right?
I've got a couple of miniseries on mine.
Now
you say that's...
Yeah.
It's a made-for-TV movie, isn't it? I mean, that's a made-for-TV movie.
Well, in that case, instead of 10, I have 14. No, the first one, because I did. I omitted the 60s, and I omitted Scarlet. Because they were miniseries.
I don't think I ever saw Scarlet.
The Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice, omitted it because it was a miniseries. So just letting you know, those were on there. But The Face on the Milk Carton, 1995.
Ooh, and I never heard of that.
Oh, it's based on a book, on a novel by Carolyn Cooney. But it stars Kelly Martin as Jennifer Sands, and a 16-year-old girl who finds her face on the back of a milk carton and puts the pieces of her past together. And she goes and tracks down her family. And it was a whole, like...
It sounds like a Lifetime movie.
Yes, a lot of mine are. They're not Lifetime movies. They were like on NBC, ABC, that kind of thing. And Lifetime apparently remade some of the ones that I've put down. But I know most of mine are from the 90s. I think all of them are from the 90s. But Yeah, that was the first one. I Sharon Lawrence was in it, and I liked Sharon Lawrence. I watched a lot of these things. I loved like dark soap opera drama type crap. So you'll see. You'll have way less respect for me by the end of this.
I've watched a lot of those Lifetime movies over the years because, you know, and a lot of them that are like based on real things or whatever. For some reason, Rob Lowe shows up in a lot of
Yeah.
Rob Lowe loves doing stuff like that.
Candace Cameron, man.
But Kelly Martin. Anytime that I see Kelly Martin in anything, I think it's going to be a melodrama, some kind of melodrama.
Yeah.
That's her bag. But and she's supposed to be coming back, and they're going to do like they're bringing Life Goes On back.
Ooh,
and she's playing the same character. She's just 40 something now. And, but I don't know. To me, Life Goes On doesn't work without Corky. Because I think he was a big part of that show. And then if I don't know, I mean, the dude that played him is still alive, but I don't know if he's still acting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm talking about that. I just thought of it. So
it's okay, man. This is a stream of consciousness. You know, it's fine.
I have no idea what you kids are going on about.
You never saw Life Goes On, the TV show back in the...
I don't know who Corky is. I don't know who the woman you said you wanted to watch on the show. Cheryl Lewis, did you say?
Sharon Lawrence.
Sharon Lawrence.
Sharon Lawrence. She was like Sipowicz's wife on NYPD.
She was on an episode of Voyager where she played Amelia Earhart.
Yes, she was. Okay. She was. And
You're talking my language.
And back when I saw this movie, I had a crush on her because she was on I think it was an NBC sitcom called Fired Up with Liam Rimini.
Yeah, she's been in something recently.
I have all his albums.
No, Life Goes On was a drama that came on back in the mid 90s that was about a family. Patti LuPone was the mother, and Kelly Martin was her daughter, and Corky was their son that had Down syndrome, and it was an actor that actually had Down syndrome playing the part, and he was really good. But but now he's like 50 something. I don't think he's acting anymore, but Rick, what about you? What's the first one on your list?
All right, I gotta give you all a couple of caveats. None of this will come as a shock to anyone. Mine pretty much cut off around mid 80s because that's about when I stopped watching made for TV movies.
Sorry, I'd have picked you up in the 90s.
And you're not gonna find a realistic drama on any of my lists. So, I didn't write down any of the years these came out. I probably should have, but I want to start with one of my favorites. It's called City Beneath the Sea. And it was kind of C-Lab-ish. It may have been a Gerry Anderson thing or trying to cash in on the Thunderbirds UFO Gerry Anderson thing. It was about a scientific installation called Pacifica, which is under the ocean, and they turn it into a city beneath the sea. It was very, very Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea with the aesthetic of it. And the storyline was that they were closing down Fort Knox, and so they moved all the gold to Pacifica because it was the most well-guarded place on the planet. But they also had this super radioactive, unstable element that was important for something. And it had to be, it had nothing to do with shutting down Fort Knox. They moved all the gold there because gold was the only thing they could store this element in. And so there were all these scenes in this storeroom where it was just like a 10 foot high, 3 or 4 bar deep wall of gold bars, and there's like this bright light coming from inside it, and of course bad guys want to steal all the gold.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Donald Pleasance was in it because he was in everything at that point. But it was just a lot of fun, and I had the Viewmaster as a kid.
Oh.
And of course, at one point, you know, one of the bad guys is walking on the top of the gold and he falls into the element and horrible death and stuff. And you
know. I pulled it up on IMDb. I don't see Donald Pleasance. I do see James Darren.
Oh, okay.
He's in it. Yeah.
Oh.
As Dr. Okay. Talty.
So was it like 72?
71. Like, yeah. 1971. 71. Yeah.
That was
a group of 21st century colonists inhabit the underwater city called Pacifica. They find they must defend the city against hostile alien forces.
That, you see, that's bullshit. Because you know that's the IMDb. I did look it up on IMDb, I think, or it was you know IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes. And it said that, and then I went and I'm like, there were no aliens in that movie. And then I went to the actual page. And the synopsis was about the element and the gold and the stuff like that. There's no aliens involved in it whatsoever.
As some intern, it's just, whatever. Now, I cannot write down what it looks like on the poster.
I cannot in good conscience recommend this movie to anyone. I just know that as a kid, I loved it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was Star Trek, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Land of the Giants, Time Tunnel, Lost in Space, all of that stuff. You know, I ate it up like crazy, and this was mm-hmm. totally in that part of the Venn diagram here.
Yeah. Well, my first one is The Stand from 1994. Mm-hmm. And it was a miniseries based on one of Stephen King's most famous novels and thickest novels to date, anyway.
And then he did the expanded edition.
Yeah, and added another five.
It comes because, with its own wheelbarrow.
Well, his publisher even told him, I can't publish this unless you knock 500 pages out of it. And it was still like a 900-page novel. And then they put all that stuff back later. But they recently remade this, but not as a... They don't really do these miniseries anymore. They just do limited series television shows now. They do like 10 episodes of a show instead of mm-hmm. doing four movies or something like that. But at the time, it aired over four nights, and each night got progressively stranger. Like the first movie was this virus got out and it started killing a lot of people. And we meet different characters from different parts of the world. But by the end of it, by the last night, they're blowing up Las Vegas with a nuclear weapon and they have to kill the devil. So, mm-hmm. so you know, it's pretty trippy, but
was it the devil Randall Flagg?
Yeah. Randall Flagg, which if you know, Stephen King novels, he shows up a lot. Randall Flagg is in a lot of stuff.
Man in Black in the Gunslinger series.
Yeah.
Dark Tower. Yeah.
and also the, what was the,
I closed my eyes. I still see his mullet.
Eyes of the Dragon. Eyes of the Dragon was a fantasy novel and it had him in it too.
Yep.
But the movie had everybody from the 90s and it had Gary Sinise, Molly Ringwald, Rob Lowe, Matt Frewer, Shawnee Smith, Ray Walston.
Hey, Molly Ringwald was ours, man.
She was still around.
You can have her. Yeah. Yeah, check her out on Riverdale. You can have her.
she's still working? Good for her.
Sometimes.
I couldn't bring myself to watch Riverdale. Just like Archie, but as a murderer.
Look, season one was fantastic.
I watched the first couple of episodes, but
everything after season one is trash.
Yeah.
Just absolute garbage.
Okay.
But season one is really good.
But if you want to see The Stand, the whole thing is available for free on YouTube, but it's all in one video. So if you can't watch it in 6 hours, then you have to pause it or come back to it later or something like that. But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I do recommend
The Stand, and I couldn't get it.
I've never read it. I've never read The Stand all the way through, but that version of the movie, I didn't really like the remake. Of course, I haven't seen the whole thing. I only watched the first couple of episodes, but that one, and it may have just been because I was 94, I was like 16 or 17, something like that. So I didn't really know what good movies were at the time, but that movie I found really entertaining back then. So
it's been forever since I've seen it. So I might take you up and check that out on YouTube. See if I can see if I can watch more than 10 minutes without going. Okay.
Well, you know, early 90s, that was the thing. Every year, Stephen King had a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like appointment TV. You want, because I mean, other than VCRs, you know, you could record stuff with a VCR, but we didn't have DVRs and stuff like that. You watched it when it came on.
Did you put it on your list? Because it was a miniseries.
I didn't put it on my list because I already had this on there and I didn't want my whole list to be Stephen King.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is another good one. It, the Tommyknockers.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't the Langoliers a miniseries?
The Langoliers. Well, yeah, but it was just two nights. It was a two-night miniseries.
Okay, okay.
And then there were some that he made that weren't based on novels. Like he did the Storm of the Century,
mm-hmm.
and he did one called Rose Matter, which was a haunted house type, the haunting kind of
thing. Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I remember it being pretty good.
Terrible book, though.
Rose Matter. I didn't know it was a book. No, maybe it wasn't Rose Matter. It was Rose Red was the name of that movie, I think. Because because this movie wasn't based on a book. I remember that from the time.
Gotcha.
But okay, yeah, The Stand. Dave, what's the next one on your list?
I'm gonna lump two of mine together because they are essentially the same movie. And they even aired on two different networks, one on CBS. And one on ABC the same night at the same time. One is Casualties of Love, the Long Island Lolita story.
Oh yeah.
About Amy Fisher and Joey Buttafuoco.
Oh, okay.
And I was obsessed with that story when I was a kid. I was just like, what is happening in the world? And I was just like,
I haven't heard in
way too long. And like Drew Barrymore was in it, and it was a whole thing. And then like they had on ABC, the Amy Fisher story, which was Alyssa Milano.
That's the one I watched. I remember the one with Alyssa Milano. Yeah.
Oh, I set it up to one to tape at my parents' house and one to tape at my grandmother's house so that I could watch both of them. And I was just like, I've got to figure out what's happening in this based on a true story. Don't you understand?
All right. I'm going to make a confession here. And I think maybe this was sort of a mental ice pick, but I, for the life of me, can't remember what the deal was with Amy Fisher and Joey Buttafuoco. Why do I even know them?
Amy Fisher was she was like a teenager that that was dating Joey Buttafuoco, and he kept promising, I'm going to leave my wife, and he wasn't doing it. So Amy Fisher went to her house and shot her in the face.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay. And she survived. She survived. Yeah. And Amy Fisher went to jail for a while. And Joey Buttafuoco made a living appearing and guest appearing and stuff after that.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what the torrid part was. That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay.
And also there's a fantastic going back weirdly. We were talking, I think, in between the shows about News Radio and it's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
But there's love that show. There's a bit where Andy Dick is on, he's wrapping up a story about Amy Fisher, and everyone's just staring at him like with their mouths agape and everything. And he's like, what's going on? And they're like, I don't think you pronounced that guy's name right, Matthew. And he's like,
Buttafuoco.
What is, it's Joey Buttafuoco. No, it's not. No, it's not. And he realizes what he does. And he's like, oh my God, please don't fire me. Please don't fire me.
The FCC will be visiting us later.
try Rodriguez.
But they aired both of those on the same night on different networks. I didn't realize
they did.
That.
They That's did.
Funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Because they always, I mean, whenever there was something big, they made movies about it, and it wasn't abnormal to have different networks make different versions of the same thing, but it's kind of strange to air them on the same night.
Yeah, it's weird.
Split your audience like that, because it's the same audience is going to want to just, which one do you want to watch more, Drew Barrymore or Alyssa Milano?
Alyssa Milano.
No. All right. Rick, what about you? What's the next one you got?
Okay. This one is from 1973. And this one I remember very clearly because it scared the crap out of me. Again, I haven't seen it since it aired in 1973, so I can't say that you should go out and watch this, but Frankenstein, the True Story. Have any of you ever seen this?
I've never heard of it, no.
No, I don't know that one.
it was a big deal because it was, you know, it was here's who was in it.
James Mason. Yeah.
Jane Seymour.
That's quality. Right away. Yeah,
it was like one of Jane Seymour's first big roles. She was, mm-hmm. and it kind of combines Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and there's just a bunch of really creepy scenes, like Dr. Frankenstein and his, I don't know if his friend was Henry Clerval or whether it was Polidori. It mashed a bunch of
Tom Baker was in it
together.
Yeah. Well, now this has become appointment viewing. I've got to find it.
What'd you say?
Tom Baker was in it.
He was?
Yeah, he's just credited as sea captain.
Oh.
Tom Baker and Jane Seymour, I've got to watch this now.
So, like, there's a scene where he reanimates an arm. And then there's this, I don't remember the context, but, like, the arm gets away, and it's, like, crawling across the floor. And so he pours acid over it. And you just see this arm dissolve into bones. And I remember that scene very vividly. And the concept is like the monster, who's played by some young, handsome dude, is beautiful. And so then Frankenstein builds Jane Seymour, and she's beautifuler. And, mm-hmm. and I think that he falls in love with her and the monster falls in love with her. But then eventually the monster, the things Frankenstein creates start to deteriorate, become hideous and become horrible, and then the horror ensues. And it was very atmospheric, very gothic. I really want to watch it again, because I cannot for the life of me tell you if it was any good.
Yeah,
but it had a big effect on me as a kid. This was also right around the same time that Frank Langella's Dracula came out. And I thought for the life, I thought that was going to be a made-for-TV movie, but it was apparently a theatrical release. But if you've never seen Langella's Dracula, it's not good, but he's amazing in it.
I'm
knocking shit off the table.
It's very rare that he's in anything that he's not amazing in.
Yeah, he always, you know, but he was the first... really sexy Dracula. You know, Lugosi was sexier than like the Dracula in the book, but he was still very, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of sex appeal to Lugosi's Dracula. Langella was just oozing gorgeousness all over the screen. And like, there's this one scene where he cuts slices his belly open so it's bleeding, and then he makes Lucy or Mina drink it, and it's just like, this is, even for 1975, this was some pretty racy shit on TV.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dave, you said you're a Jane Seymour fan. Have you ever seen the sitcom Be Positive? Yeah, on CBS.
I haven't seen it. It just looks so bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's weird because the first season and the second season are so different, because the first season was about this guy that needed a kidney transplant, mm-hmm. and he's falling in love with the girl that's going to donate the kidney to him and stuff.
Right.
Well, they did all that. They didn't really know where to go after that. So in the second season, she like inherits a lot of money, and she buys the nursing home that she works at. And now you've got all the old people that live in the nursing home. They're like the characters on the show. And Jane Seymour is one of them. And she's like this overly sexed, horny, older lady, you know. And she's pretty funny.
She's basically her role from Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed by like the trailers I saw for Be Positive, because I really liked that lead actress. She was fantastic in Masters of Sex. I don't know if you guys saw that with Lizzie Kaplan and I can never remember that guy's name. Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about the real people, like the was Virginia and Bill Masters. They were actual like sexual psychologists or something that did a lot of research. Yes. These people. It was a dramatization of their life. so much so that, like, to avoid legal issues, they had to give them an inaccurate amount of children, and their names had to be completely different because the families didn't want anything to do with the show. But yeah, it was a fantastic show.
She was also on that American Crime Story this past season, did the whole Monica Lewinsky thing.
Yeah.
And she was on it playing Paula Jones, and they put this big fake nose on her and stuff.
They didn't have to put a big fake nose on her. She's already got a big nose.
And Clive Owens, is that the actor's name? Clive Owens played
Clive Owen.
Yeah. Yeah, he played Bill Clinton.
Oh, that's weird.
Also with a big fake nose.
That's weird.
Well, he does have a big fake nose.
All right. The next one I got here on my list is from 1986, Return to Mayberry.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Damn, I didn't think about Return to Mayberry at all.
This is both the best and the worst thing that's ever been on TV.
Yes.
Because if you're an Andy Griffith fan, it was great because you got to see everybody come back together. They had this big reunion. You got to see the Darlings sing again, all this kind of stuff. But unless
it was all so off and weird. Yeah,
if you unless you like really bad movies, which I do on occasion, this movie was bad. It had some funny moments, but overall it was the dumbest plot that they could have found to just figure out a way to glue all this together, to get all these characters together again and have an excuse for a movie. But the plot is that Andy comes back to town because Opie's wife is having a baby. And he also plans on running for sheriff again while he's there. But then he finds out that Barney's also running for sheriff, and he doesn't want to run against him. And then the sea monster starts showing up in Myers Lake. And fast forward to the end, and it was Barney's opponent trying to make him look bad by having Ernest T. Bass pretend to be a sea monster and all this kind of stuff. And it was kind of crazy. And then you had Howard Sprague asking how his... You know, he kept dyeing his hair different colors and asking Andy how it looked and all this kind of stuff. So,
well, that was painfully in character, though, for real. That is what Howard would be doing.
But it was kind of strange because you had all these characters from you got two different eras of Andy Griffith. You got the black and white show and you got the color show, and there's different characters on both of those. But they were putting them all together. So you had Goober and Gomer at the filling station. And then you had
it was the G&G shop, actually. Yeah, wasn't it? Okay.
And then you had Howard was there, but Barney some of the other characters that weren't there at the time that Howard was there, they were also there and stuff. You know, the Darlings were there and all that kind of stuff. But not something that I'll ever, I mean, of course Andy's gone now, but I mean basically everybody from that show other than Ron Howard is gone now, you know. So
yeah,
I was Thelma Lou, the lady that played Thelma Lou, just passed away a couple months ago.
Did she?
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that. I didn't hear that. Betty Lynn.
Yeah.
And
she was still signing up. Like if you went up to Mount Airy, if you went to Mount Airy, which is where Mayberry is based on, she was going to the Chamber of Commerce once a week and signing autographs, and the line was wrapped around the block every time. Man, she was like 90 something years old. So.
Yeah, I saw she was working as like a door greeter at the Walmart. They're like, oh yeah, come on. It was like a tourist attraction. Like, come get greeted at Walmart by Thelma Lou. It was, you know, bizarre. But yeah, I was telling my wife, I was coming up with my list, and I was like, Sean is going to say, I know Sean is going to say something that I'm not going to think of. And I'm going to be like, damn it, because Return to Mayberry should be on my list and it's not.
I must have looked at, you know, 500 made for TV movie lists online, and that did not appear on any of them.
Well, it's just always in the back of my mind. I watched it not too long ago. It was on YouTube. I don't know if it's still there. But yeah, it was and it's also strange because they killed Aunt B, but the lady that played Aunt B was still alive when they made the movie. It's just Andy. Well, and Francis, what was it, Francis Bovier or something?
Yeah,
they didn't really get along very well.
She called him and apologized like a week before she died. So
yeah. Yeah.
There was drama between Andy and Aunt B.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't get along.
She was a film actress. She was used to a different filming schedule, and she was she considered herself to be more professional than all this TV stuff going on. But she also at the time couldn't get another job. So I mean, she was on the Andy Griffith Show all the way from the beginning to the end, and she was on Mayberry RFD the entire time, you know, as well. So
yeah, well, I saw her in a couple of movies, and she was basically Aunt B and everything. She was in The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah,
and
yeah. She was in a lot of stuff. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But yeah, there's a scene where Andy goes to her grave, mm-hmm. and he has a memory of, I mean, they don't like have a flashback or anything, but he's remembering her saying something, and they play her talking, but it's not her. It's some other old lady. Mm. And it's just really weird. They should just let the whole thing out. But
well, she may have pissed off a producer who was like, her, we're not getting her back in here.
Yeah, yeah, Andy. She pissed off Andy.
Yeah. Well, also, but towards the end of her life, I think she kind of has some dementia and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Could be, yeah.
So.
But yeah, that voiceover, it was like one of the worst Aunt B impressions I've ever heard. And she's saying like the most asinine thing. You'd think like Andy's standing at her grave, he's got to have like a nice memory, not just like,
make sure you eat your vegetables.
Eat your peas, you know? You're like, what are you talking about? Like, why are you remembering that? Like, all right.
I used to love the way she would berate me.
But see, that's a movie trope that people going and visiting graves, and then they're visited by the voice, or they're visited by the ghost. And the one movie that did it the best was MacGruber.
Oh, I never saw that.
Because he goes to her grave to visit her, and her ghost shows up to tell him something, and then they end up having sex on the grave.
Becomes Ghostbusters.
MacGruber's a great movie, and it's a great TV series on Peacock now. So,
did they keep it canon that MacGyver's his dad from the SNL sketches?
I don't think they went there in this. Well, in the movie, duration. I know they didn't, but
yeah,
the movie had, it was the last film role that I think Val Kilmer did. Now, it wasn't the last one. The last one he did was the one where they had to basically make him not talk because his voice had gotten so bad.
Yeah.
But it was really close. It was one of the last things that he did. But
I forgot he was having,
he had throat cancer or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, what's the next one you got?
I am actually really excited because in looking this one back up, I didn't realize there were two sequels. So now I'm going to track those all of this down. And dude, Sarah Plain and Tall from 1991. It was a Hallmark film. It was Glenn Close and Christopher Walken. I loved the book. I loved the novel. And I loved this movie. I loved Christopher Walken and Glenn Close. And I am absolutely going to track down Skylark and Winter's End and watch those sequels.
I didn't realize it had sequels either. Yeah, I think we watched that like in school. I think we watched that in class one day when it was raining outside or something like that. But yeah, I read the book when I was a kid too.
Yeah, I watched it at home for pleasure.
Yeah.
I liked the book because I did read that in school.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh crap, they got a movie. Cause like, I'm like over here, like nine or whatever, eight or nine. And I would like pull out a little TV guide insert thing, like the local TV guide thing at my grandmother's house. And that's what I would do on Sunday afternoon. I'd have like Andy Griffith playing on VHS tape. And I'd just be going through and highlighting stuff in that book, the tape.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big reader when I was a kid, and I don't read as much now because at 44, if I read 10 lines of a novel, I fall asleep.
That's real.
Nothing to do with age, dude. It's all about the kids.
But I remember in school, you know, there were certain novels that you had to read, and most of my class was like, oh, we don't want to read that. And I'm like, yeah, give me another book. You know, that's where I read The Outsiders and Of Mice and Men and, you know, stuff like that.
By the way, Rick, I don't have children and I very much fall asleep like two pages into anything. Like in the last 5 years, it's just gotten like, God, just.
No, I'm the same way. It just took me longer than 40 to get there. That's why I'm all about audiobooks now, because if I sit down to read a physical book, I'm out in two paragraphs.
Well, the thing I like about audiobooks is like I just stop listening.
Like, yeah, I tend to zone out sometimes. Yeah, and then I miss something, and I have to end up rewinding it.
The bet and Tolkien fans, if you want to give me shit about it, you I'll tell you my email. The best way to listen to Lord of the Rings, or the best way to consume Lord of the Rings, is on audiobook, so that you can zone out during the pages and pages and pages of descriptions of grass and blades and twigs and elven songs and hobbit songs and orc songs. There's so much crap. I Tolkien was a genius, and you know, he was writing in the days before TV, when people enjoyed 20 hours of just sitting there reading. But good God, those books could use some editing.
Oh yeah, Tolkien is, so I love sci-fi and fantasy and stuff like that. Tolkien was a genius. I loved every single page of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. I will never read them again.
No.
I read them once. I only have so many books that I can read in my life. I'm not going to go back and read that one again. I haven't even gone back and watched the movies in the last probably 10 years or so. You know,
we own all of the,
because they're so long,
all of the deluxe editions. And we've tried a couple of times in the last 20 years to sit down and all right, we're going to watch them. And we never even get through the Fellowship.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're great, but it's just, who's got that much time anymore?
What was that story about Tolkien, about like somebody cornered him at some sort of signing or something, was like, hey man, you know, according to the Oxford Dictionary, you didn't spell elves right. The plural of elves should be elfs, according to the Oxford Dictionary. He's like, I wrote the Oxford Dictionary. Mm-hmm. Like, I changed my mind.
I can call them whatever I want.
Well, that's how the whole thing started. Was he created a language, and then he built up this mythology to back up the language, because he was a linguist and a botanist, which is why. The first time I tried to read The Fellowship of the Ring, I got as far as Rivendell, and then he started really going hardcore into describing all of the plants around, and I was 18 and I fell asleep.
I wish that somebody would do because the big thing now is releasing like these 10 episode limited series and stuff like that, and I wish somebody went back and took The Hateful Eight and turned it into a 4-episode limited series. They did the cuts, and then you have an episode 2. So if you wanted to watch it over 4 nights, they had already cut it up for you so that you didn't end it in a weird spot or something.
Also extended though. They
added some stuff to it. Yeah,
they gave Tarantino the ability to go in, like, if you wanted to add a bunch of shit to it that you had to cut for time before. You want to do that and make it a series? He's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was cool because if you're watching it, you don't really know where I should stop it for it to make sense to stop right there. But they edited it that way. And I wish somebody would go back with Lord of the Rings and turn it into like a 10 episode series that you could watch it like
the extended editions.
And it would already be edited for you that way so that you didn't have to pick a weird spot.
There's a new Tolkien.
Yeah, there's a TV series coming, but I'm talking about the actual movie, split it up into chunks, which I know John said that he watched it not long ago, and he did that. He just basically just watched an hour of it or something like that. But I want somebody to find just the right spot to stop it so that I'm not ending it, you know, like in the middle of an arc or something like that.
Body will tell you, Sean.
Yeah.
When it's time to pee. Yeah. When it's time to pee, that's it for the night. I'm not watching anymore.
It's usually when my wife nudges me and said, do you want to just go to bed? You're falling asleep. I'm like, I guess so. All right. Rick, what's the next one you got?
Okay. I'm going to take a page out of Dave's book here, but I'm kind of cramming 4 into 1.
Oh, well, that's ambitious.
this will make sense. Okay.
I'm here for it. Let's do it.
And Greg, Greg put us through this on the Starbase. Greg Blanchard. Gene Roddenberry, after Star Trek was canceled, spent the majority of the 70s trying to remain relevant and trying to get back on TV. And to that end, he created three versions of kind of the same story. The most successful one came out was released in 1973, and it was called Genesis 2. And it was about it was kind of a Buck Rogers thing. A guy named Dylan Hunt, who is a modern person, gets frozen. He did this three different times. It was Genesis 2, Planet Earth, and Strange New World. Mm. And they were all some variation of Dylan Hunt ends up from the past in the future. But Genesis 2, I think, was the most coherent one of the three. And that's really being generous. You know, Dylan Hunt wakes up in this post-apocalyptic future where Ted Cassidy and Marriott Hartley are there. and there's like broken technology and they're, oh God, there's one scene where there's like the ruling class all walk around in loincloths and feathered capes, basically. And there's this one scene where they address the council, and one of the council members is Gene Roddenberry sitting there in like this leather loincloth and a feathered cape. And it's just like, oh Jesus. But there is a hilarious in joke in the whole thing, because when Marriott Hartley was on Star Trek, she was in the episode All Our Yesterdays, the one where Spock and McCoy go back in time to this frozen world, and Spock, because he hasn't been prepared by the Atavacron, reverts to his primitive nature and falls in love with Zara Beth, played by Marriott Hartley. And at the time, NBC she basically wore a what we call a bunny fur bikini. But at the time, the censors would not allow them to show her belly button, and they made a big stink about, you can't show her belly button, change the costume. So they changed the costume and you didn't see her belly button. And so Roddenberry, as a big F you to the censors in his movie, Marriott Hartley has two belly buttons in this one.
he said they owed her one. They owed him one. Yeah.
They owe me a belly button.
And John Saxon plays Dylan Hunt. If you know genre movies of the 70s, genre movies and TV shows, you'll know John Saxon immediately. He died, I think, like 5 or 6 years ago. But they get progressively worse as the iterations go on. If you are a fan of Roddenberry, if you are a fan of Star Trek, especially the original series, you owe it to yourself to see these. Just to see, I don't want to say that Star Trek was a fluke, because obviously the Next Generation proved that Roddenberry did still have, he had some good ideas. He just needed to have good people around him to make them, to refine them. You know, people like Gene Kuhn and Bob Justman and
DC Fontana.
You see, yeah. Oh, yeah. DC Fontana, and I'm blanking on names right now. But anyway, you know, Gene's real genius was in hiring really good people, people who would say, "No, that's stupid," but we can take this out of it, you know, and going on with it.
Did you say Robert Justman?
Yeah, Bob Justman was, you know, okay. Vital. Matt Jeffries, who designed the Enterprise and the Klingon mm-hmm. battle cruiser and all of that stuff.
I love his tube.
Well, that's why he did not. Oh, I know. Misconception. Jeffries did not. The Jeffries tube was never named in TOS. It wasn't until it was kind of one of those things that we all called it a Jeffries tube, but it was never mentioned on screen until TNG at some point. And I think it was after Jeffries had passed away, unfortunately. Herb Solo, that was the name I was. I can't imagine I forgot his name because I interviewed the man. He was wonderful. You know, Roddenberry was really good at hiring good people. That, you know, kind of like George Lucas's genius was never in writing. It was in bringing in people who could take what he was writing and polish the turds he was
putting. You got that right.
Yeah. But again, like the prequel trilogy, if you want to see what unfiltered Roddenberry was like, watch these three movies.
I don't. And I have seen a chunk of the first one, Genesis 2.
Was a staple of Sunday afternoon television for a long time.
Yeah.
In the pre-cable days. Mm-hmm. But the other one I want to fold into this souffle is Trekkies. Which showed up in a list of made for TV movies, and I didn't think it was.
It was in the theater. I remember it being in the. I didn't see it in the theater, but I remember it being in the theater. Maybe that's the documentary, right? That didn't Denise Crosby put together. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, she didn't put it together. Brought in to narrate it.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, Trekkies is this wonderful documentary. You expect it to be kind of a hatchet job, kind of like what we expected Galaxy Quest to be. And then we're pleasantly surprised to find out it was a love letter to the fans and to Star Trek with enough humor in it to go, we're laughing at ourselves we're laughing, you know, with each other at ourselves as opposed to being ridiculed by the movie. And Trekkies is exactly like that. It's a very honest look at fandom. Came out in 97, so it's, you know, fandom at that point. And it doesn't pull any punches. You know, it shows you some people who are, even by our standards, like, dude, you need to take a pill and relax a little bit. But it's very respectful. It's a love letter to the fans, as opposed to, you know, let's make, you know, like, you know, Triumph the Comic Dog at the opening of The Phantom Menace. Which, granted, is hilarious. Look up the video; it's you'll
piss yourself. Oh yeah, that's fantastic. What does he even? He asks,
"Have you ever seen a vagina?"
First of all, I like the one where he was interviewing the Star Wars lady. She was pregnant, and he's like, "That's the last time he'll see a vagina."
Yeah.
And then he's like talking to someone in a Darth Vader outfit, and he points to his chest plate, the buttons. And he's like, "Does that button call your parents to pick you up?"
It's on YouTube. It's really worth a watch.
Or me to poop on.
Yeah. But anyway, Trekkies. While there are moments where you're like, you seriously went to jury duty in your Starfleet uniform. All right, whatever. It's very much a tribute as opposed to a hatchet job. And I think that these kind of all complement each other in that, you know, it's good to know who Roddenberry really was and to not, you know, I used to venerate the man beyond all reason. And then I started to learn more about him. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry was an incredibly flawed human being, even by normal standards. He was, you know, but he had some brilliant ideas and he was really good at putting together a great team. It's like, you gotta see these movies to understand that he really only had about five good ideas and he's trying to redo them over and over and over again.
You were going to loop in Quester.
I haven't seen Quester. If anyone knows where you can find the Quester tapes, I would love to watch them because I, you know, it's proto Data, but it was also one of the biggest cues Roddenberry ever gave to Nimoy and almost ruined Nimoy from Star Trek. Almost. One of the main reasons that they had a lot of trouble getting him back for movies and stuff was the whole Quester tape debacle where Roddenberry promised him the lead and then yanked it out from under him without even telling him. He showed up for makeup and they went, "What are you doing here?"
God. Yeah.
It was terrible.
You can buy them on DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm seeing some eBays and some Walmarts and some stuff like that.
Probably stupid expensive.
How was Trekkies 2? Did you
see that? I haven't seen it.
Seen Trekkies 2. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. And they go back and they revisit some of the people that were in the first one.
Oh, that's interesting.
And just show, like I think there was a... I'm trying to remember. I don't remember any names or anything like that. But there was this one guy in Trekkies that stands out, that he was just like an ultra nerd. And
was he the kid with the lisp and the mullet who had a uniform made for him?
And maybe.
And he was sort of narrating a lot of Trekkies, and it was just like,
yeah,
get away from this guy. He's an
ultra. Yeah. And he had like a whole group of people who were like filming a Star Trek thing, and they all had their uniforms and stuff, and was like, what are we talking about here?
And he was taking action figures and he was painting them to, because things had changed since the toy had come out or something like that.
Well, no, that's okay. But,
yeah. but they went back and revisited him in Trekkies 2, and I think he had gotten married and had a kid or something like that. So, yeah. So good for him.
We do occasionally.
We find our Eve from time to time. All right. The next one on my list is from 1989, Lonesome Dove.
Ooh.
And I'm not a guy that typically likes Westerns. I mean, sometimes I enjoy them, like 1883 that just ended last night. I thought,
was that good?
It was incredible. I loved it.
What's it a spinoff of?
It is a prequel to Yellowstone, but you don't have to know anything about Yellowstone to like it.
Yeah, it's just,
in Yellowstone, the main character, I mean, like they live on a ranch in Montana, and 1883 is about like his great grandfather and how he got to Montana. And I mean, that's pretty much the only connection. They're not really connected beyond that.
Both of those have looked really good to me.
Yeah. Oh, I love Yellowstone, but 1883 was like a limited 10 episode series. It's not going to have a season 2 or anything like that.
But they are doing another prequel that's got to be like 1939 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they're going to continue it on, and it'll be interesting to see, because they're going to show like the different generations. Like they're going to do a 1933 and probably go on and do another one after that. But
and I love Sam Elliott. So
Sam Elliott was great in this show. Lonesome Dove was a miniseries that was based on a novel by Larry McMurtry. McMurtry? Yeah. And it may have been the first Western that I actually sat down and watched, because they did this thing back in the late 80s, early 90s, where they would show the miniseries like in the fall around sweeps time, around ratings time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then if you didn't see it or whatever, they would usually rerun it in the spring. So when it came on in the fall, we didn't see it. But everybody was like, oh, that movie was so good. And my dad really wanted to see it. So when it came on in the spring, we all sat down and watched it and really enjoyed it. And it's got Robert Duvall, Tommy Lee Jones, Danny Glover, Diane Lane, and Angelica Houston in it. So it's an all-star cast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two men that used to be Texas Rangers. Now they're running this horse stable in a town called Lonesome Dove. And, you know, they have an adventure. They've made some movies since then, like Comanche Moon, I think, or something. They're like loosely tied to that, but they're more like just based on other books. They're not necessarily set with the movie. They did do another movie. They did like Return to Lonesome Dove. I don't remember if I watched it or not, so it must not have, you know, it must not have been great for me or whatever. And they also did two seasons of a TV series, Lonesome Dove the series, which that was the thing back in the day. Mm-hmm. You would just name something whatever the series.
Yeah.
And
you don't use any of the original cast. You can say the same people, but they're not.
You recast everybody, and it's usually syndicated and shown at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was a decent show, and it was not about those. Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall are the main characters in Lonesome Dove. And the series was not about either one of them. It was about one of the other characters that was like, you know, circular to their characters.
All right.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. You've never seen it?
No, I'm aware of it. And, in growing up, you know, when I was when I was young, I didn't care anything about Westerns. Weirdly, when I got about 23, 22, I just gotten like super into Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And Sergio Leone. Yeah. And I got really into like, I really liked John Cusack's The Jack Bull and whatnot, and just really got into some like weird Western stuff. But when I was growing up, you know, my grandparents would always be like flipping around, and then you just hear them in the background go, "Oh, Lonesome Dove," and they would sit down and watch it, and I'm like, "Is it the same movie that you're always watching? Is it a show? Is it a
what is See, that's it?" The like, way that's the way my grandparents were with like Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah. Because oh my God, Anne of Green Gables. Yeah.
They would show that movie. On PBS, they would show that movie at least once a year. And when they showed it, my grandmother was going to watch it. It didn't matter if she'd seen it 50 times or not.
What was the other one? The Annalee or something. I can't remember what it's called.
Anne of Avonlea. Yeah, they did like
Anne of Avonlea. Yeah. Yeah, there was a bunch of them. No, there was like, I looked it up probably a year or two ago.
They've got a Netflix like, series now called Anne with an E.
Yeah. And it's, there are like seven or eight movies, man. Like,
see, my wife loves them. Every time we find another iteration of Anne of Green Gables, my wife wants to watch it.
I mean, I can't talk shit. I'm over here watching Sarah Plainenthal, but I mean, like I watched like everything that like Little House ever put out, you know, but
I think the thing that I didn't like about Westerns when I was a kid is just that they were always on. My grandfather watched them when I was at his house, there was going to be a Western on. My dad watched them, but he watched more of the newer stuff as far as the 80s and the 90s, the newer stuff.
Yeah.
My grandfather was watching the old stuff, but they were just always there. But as I grew up and I watched some of these things, I realized that, you know, I've compared at conventions when I'm doing panels, I've said that the superhero movies of today are the Westerns of yesterday, because a Western is such a broad genre, because it can be anything. It can be a heist movie, or it can be a drama, or it can be, you know, it can be all kinds of stuff. And that's what the superhero movies are now. You know, they're all superhero movies, but they're split up, and you know, this is a revenge movie, this is a heist movie, you know, that kind of stuff. So
absolutely.
Westworld is the I was trying to think of like the last Western, because they did a True Grit a few years back, remake a True Grit, which wasn't bad. But I think the only Western I've really enjoyed in the last, you know, 30 years maybe was Westworld.
The series or the
series.
Okay. I thought you were talking about that old Yul Brynner movie.
The old Yul Brynner one was it was very much a product of its time, and for its time it was fine. World was garbage, but Westworld was it you know, it was the Terminator before the Terminator happened, and it was not bad, you know, by the standards of the time.
Yeah,
but you know, 30 years,
huh?
30 years.
I'm not a fan of the genre.
Unforgiven.
Good God, don't get me started on that snooze fest. Oh my God, I took a date to see that movie. She was visiting me from England. And we went to see, she wanted to see Unforgiven. And good Lord, that movie is boring.
310 to Yuma?
Haven't seen it.
The original or the remake?
Well, I was going to go with the remake, but I mean, Glenn Ford in the original is fantastic.
Yeah. And I did like, there was one that came out a few years ago that was called Hell or High Water that had Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty good movie. I liked it.
Yeah.
What's the one that's on Netflix that has like an all African American cast, almost all African American cast? It's got
I don't know,
Regina what's her name? Regina King. Regina King's in it. Hold on a second, let me look it up, because it's great, because it's almost it's a Western, and it takes place in, you know, the Old West. And it's about people that actually existed, but it's also kind of tongue in cheek, and it's very action oriented. And let me look it up. Netflix.
Wait, you said 30 years. Back to the Future 3. Oh God.
I'm one of the heretics who's not a huge Back to the Future fan. I enjoyed the first movie. The second two didn't do much for me.
Rick, man.
I grant you, I should be burned at the stake for it.
Oh,
I said Back to the Future 3 is the one that they used to show on TV the most, so I've probably seen it the most times. The Harder They Fall is what it's called. It's on Netflix, okay. And it's only been out for like the last 6 months, so it's pretty new. Okay. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Thing is, I grew up in, you know, I was born in the late, in the mid 60s. But, you know, as a kid, the majority of my TV watching was in the 70s and 80s. So I grew up on a little bit of Little House on the Prairie, but like Bonanza and the Wild Wild West was, you know, Jim West was one of my holy trinity of Jim West, mm-hmm. James Kirk and Steve Austin, you know, as a kid. So, and the Cartwright boys were my favorites as far as Westerns go. But you know, it was all very sanitized, very clean, racist as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and some of the John Wayne movies I enjoyed. What was it? Three Mules for Sister Sarah, something like that.
That's Eastwood. Two Mules for Sister Sarah, and that's
Eastwood.
That's
right.
Clint Eastwood, yeah.
And Rooster Cogburn. That's the one I'm thinking of with Kate Hepburn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were fun. I watched The Watchers for the first time. Or The Watchers? No, not The Watchers. The
Searchers.
The Searchers. Which was like supposed to be the quintessential John Wayne Western.
Yeah.
And it was so racist, I could not enjoy a minute of it.
Yeah. I'm not a big John Wayne guy.
Yeah. You know, there were, you know, like the what's the movie that plays every St. Patrick's Day? The Quiet Man, where there's like that 20-minute fist fight. And mm-hmm. my stepdad used to watch that every year. And so I've seen that scene 100 times.
Yeah.
I've never seen the whole movie. But just in general, I've found Westerns to either be, you know, the modern Western, which is gritty and dirty and painful and kind of like Game of Thrones or Deadwood, where it's just anger and death and pain and disease and unpleasantness, or uh-huh. it's so sanitized that it's like, oh, this is just,
yeah,
unbelievable. And so I just avoid the genre now.
It just depends for me. Like it's like any other, you know, people are like, oh, how can you like Westerns? I'm like, I don't like Westerns. I like certain Westerns. Mm-hmm. High Plains, yeah. Drifter, Sergio Leone stuff, you know, like
spaghetti Western. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I, and really that's just like live action anime, I guess, because yeah. he ripped off Kurosawa. I do like a lot of Eastwood stuff. I do like a lot of the more modern Westerns, but I can't do John Wayne generally.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Have you ever seen The Conqueror?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's you owe it. It's mm-hmm. John Wayne playing Genghis Khan.
Mm-mm.
And that's pretty much all I need to say.
Mm-hmm. That is all you need to say. And actually, all you need to say is John Wayne.
Yeah.
Because I just like it's swaggering bullshit. I don't know. Plus, like, it is like a lot of John Wayne stuff is like, it is that like very sanitized, like, you know. That's one of the things I love about Back to the Future 3 is like he totally dresses up like a John Wayne character and shows up in the Old West and they're like, what the hell are you wearing, boy?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the pink shirt. Yeah, the brand new cowboy boots and all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be honest. I only saw it the one time when it was out in the movie, you know, in the cinemas, and I haven't seen it again. So I could be judging it unfairly.
Yeah,
and you get that one racist line. What's that guy that used to do? You hear his voice a lot. He used to be on Green Acres, and he kind of talked like this.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He's like, "What are you, some kind of Chinese?"
Yeah, he said, "You look like you took them off a dead Chinese."
Yep, yep, yep.
Ugh. All right, all right. We're gonna go around one more time, and if you have whatever you have left that you want to throw out, we'll throw those out. So the ones that I want to mention are the Jesse Stone movies, which I can't pick one because there's like 10 of them, but it's a series that it's based on a series of books by Robert B. Parker, and they all star Tom Selleck, and he plays this guy that used to be a detective in LA, and he's an alcoholic, and I think his wife died. So he left and he went to become the chief of police in this little Massachusetts coastal town. Mm-hmm. And, but there's a lot of corruption in the government, and the guy that used to have his job was corrupt, and, but he's not corrupt, you know, so he's not, I'm having none of that, but the movies are pretty good, but they're more of a, it feels more like you're watching a TV series that just has one episode every year. You know? So, but
like a Sherlock.
Yeah. But they were pretty good. And we enjoyed them. He's not making them anymore because now he's doing Blue Bloods and he's growing avocados in Florida or something like that. I don't know. No, Tom Selleck has an avocado farm.
I believe it, man. I believe it.
Hey, dude survived cancer. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah. The other one that I wanted to mention was it was called A Deadly Adoption. And it was a Lifetime movie.
Uh-huh. This is going to be more like a lot of mine.
Yeah. It had Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig in it, but they were playing it straight.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where the satire came from, because they were playing it straight, but at the same time, it was just ridiculous. It was the typical thing you've heard this plot before, where there's this couple that they can't have a baby, so they pay this woman to carry a baby for her, but mm-hmm. she turns out to be like trying to rip them off or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, and it just goes on from there. But it reminded me of because we were recently watching there's a new show on Netflix. It's called The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window. That's the name of the show. And it's got Kristen from The Good Place, married to Dax Shepard.
Kristen Bell.
It's got her in it. And it's a satire of these melodramatic kind of horror movies, but more of a thriller type stuff that you would see on Lifetime, you know. Like the woman, there's one called The Woman in the House, there's one called The Girl in the Window, you know, stuff like that. And it starts off in the first episode, they're playing it straight. Like this is a serious thing that we're doing here. By the last episode, it's completely gone haywire. And there's like a 9-year-old girl that's trying to kill people and stuff like that, you know? So it's that same kind of thing. They're doing satire on this genre, but they're playing it straight, and it just it makes it even funnier. So yeah, it's called A Deadly Adoption. It came on the Lifetime Network back in 2015. And okay. It was good.
I do remember a bit of a kerfuffle about that one. People talking about it.
That's all I got. Dave, what you got left?
What I got left?
or whatever you want to mention. Yeah.
All right. Well, the next few are pretty much the same kind of thing. I've listed A Killer Among Friends, which was a 92 movie that had, I didn't realize it came out in 92. I must have seen it pop up somewhere, a replay or something. But it was Patty Duke is a mother grieving her murdered daughter. And the daughter is Tiffany Amber Thiessen. And, you know, winds up the killer is like her shitty friends. Like so one of her shitty friends wanted to be her. So she like convinced all the other girls that she was stealing her boyfriends, and they like stoned her and drowned her.
Oh, there's a fun
twist. Yeah. Yeah. And then the next one, Mother May I Sleep with Danger. I just love the title. I love the title.
Yeah, it had Tori Spelling in it.
Tori Spelling.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that. Yeah.
Girl breaks up with her boyfriend, she kissed their mutual friend Kevin, and then enraged Billy bludgeons Aaron to death and conceals the crime. And yeah, it's a whole thing. A Friend to Die For, also apparently in the UK called Death of a Cheerleader. but that was from 94.
Detecting a theme here.
I know. I used to watch this. Like, I was so into this stuff. Like, this was based on, like, the real life murder of Kirsten Costas, who was killed by her classmate, Bernadette Prati. So that, and it was the highest rated TV movie of 1994. This one I specifically remember really well. She Fought Alone, 1995. This was Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Brian Austin Green from Beverly Hills 90210. At the time, Tiffany Amber Thiessen was not on 90210 yet. She was on Saved by the Bell still. But
and I had a very big crush on her.
Who didn't? But yeah, I remember this one. She basically, she starts dating this guy, Brian Austin Green. They have sex. Then she catches him with another girl, and he was like, man, what we did was not, like, we weren't all that, you know, special. You got it wrong. So then, but like, when she had sex with that guy, his creepy friend was watching them from afar. So then she goes home upset, and he's like, his friend is there, and he rapes her. And then he, like, rapes her friend. And then Brian Austin Green finds out about it, and they have, like, a freaking knife fight at the end of the movie. And the rapist guy, like, stabs Brian Austin Green in the leg and ruins his football career. And it's a whole kerfuffle. And at the end, you know, she, like, Tiffany Amber Thiessen is like, you know, they took down the bad guy, and she's driving off to college. And as she's driving, this is what really stuck. I feel like this is the reason I remember this movie. As she's driving, she's having this, like, vivid, like, montage of the movie we just watched to the soundtrack of Hook by Blues Traveler. And that's how the movie ends, like, her leaving town. And I'm like, what is the hook in this situation? Like,
let me show you a screenshot from this movie.
Yeah.
Why is she so happy to be covered in blood?
I don't remember that part. But yeah, that is a ridiculous. Oh yeah, and her friend Abby, she said she's gonna come, she's leaving for college, but she's gonna come back because her friend Abby is pregnant with Jace's rape baby. It's such a weird movie, man. It is probably, like, the weirdest, most I don't know, awkward of these movies. And I watched this one too a few times. No One Would Tell with freaking Candace Cameron, and the guy is the guy that she's, like, the jock that she's in love with is freaking Fred Savage. And he's, like, super controlling and beats her and whatnot. And it's the same thing over and over again. My last one, though, is a total departure. It is a sequel. It is a made for TV movie, but it's a sequel to two other theatrical movies. And I like it more than the theatrical. Revenge of the Nerds 3, The Next Generation.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. I remember that. Yeah.
Like, it's got most of the same nerds coming back, and it's got, like, Shy McBride. It is just fantastic to me. Like, I know a lot of people crap on it. And for the people that crap on it, I say you haven't seen Revenge of the Nerds 4, Nerds in Love, because that one's real bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one's real bad. But yeah, Revenge of the Nerds 3, just, I watched that. I had that on a tape, and I just watched the living hell out of it, ran that tape into the ground. And now I have it on DVD in the other room, like, in, like, a 4-pack of the Nerds movies.
Yeah, thankfully, Revenge of the Nerds, they stopped at 4 and didn't keep going like Police Academy did.
Yeah.
And make, like, I think Police Academy had at least 6 movies. They may have had more.
Are you sure they're done? I mean, I know most of the cast is dead now, but there's still a couple alive. So,
well, there were talks a few years ago of doing a reboot of Revenge of the Nerds. And
Everybody's a nerd now.
They got a, they were going to film it in an actual college, and they got everything set up. They were getting ready to actually start filming. Somebody from the college, like, actually took the time to read the script and realized how filthy the movie was going to be and didn't want to have the school associated with it. So they pulled out, no pun intended.
They, I was about to say,
but they, but, I guess they lost so much money by losing that location that it just hasn't happened again. So,
yeah, I heard that not only was it just filthy, it was also just really unfunny and really, offensive, like really stereotypical humor that just didn't.
Well, I mean, Revenge of the Nerds did have a rape. Like one of the main heroic characters of the story did rape a girl while he was dressed as a gorilla.
Yeah, he did. Was he a gorilla? I thought he was like a Darth Vader knockoff or something.
Yeah, maybe I may be remembering it wrong, but I know that she thought that he was somebody else. And
yeah. She thought that he was Stan Gable, Ted McGinley's character.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
There's a reason why a lot of times ago that movie couldn't be made today. And you would think that the people would know better than to try to make that movie today.
Well, I mean, reboot means, I mean, they probably weren't going to go that route.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, but you couldn't do Porky's today, and that's really a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was not a fan of Porky's, though, you know, and
I hated it. I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever sat through.
It was terrible.
There were like, what, 8 of them?
There were at least 3 of them. I know.
Yeah, there was 3 of them. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like that moonwalk scene is super, and not only that, just like the pictures that they had of Betty that they took from the panty raid that they were like putting like in the pies, you know, at the carnival or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's shitty. Don't do that, man. And knowing that he's behind it, she still winds up with him. Like they're married all those years later. I don't know. It does sit wrong with me. Same time, I get a line like, what are you looking at, nerd? I would say my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio. A line that I have used several times over the course of my life. So
I think that's one of the reasons why, I mean, I love Real Genius just because it's a fantastic movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I may be wrong. I may be looking at it, you know, remembering it with rose-colored glasses, but I don't think there's anything in that movie where you go, ooh, we couldn't do that now. I think it really holds up well on the it never went mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember anything like that from that movie. But
yeah.
And I every now and then you hear some story about them wanting to reboot it, and they're like, just leave it alone.
It's just a really good popcorn movie.
It's a perfect movie the way it is.
Well, I mean, I have no problem with a reboot if it's a good version of, you know, like a really interesting take. It doesn't bother me. Because they're not going to ever erase the original. It's not like when a remake comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the argument that I have to have when people talk about how much they hate a reboot or something. You know, the original's still there.
Yeah.
They haven't ruined anything. It didn't ruin anything. It's still there. You can watch that.
Yeah.
But okay, Rick, what you got?
Okay. I've got just a few left. Nothing as heavy hitting as you know, rape and murder and stuff like that. So sorry.
It was the 90s.
Rape is funny, right?
It wasn't funny. It wasn't a funny movie. None of these were funny movies. They were funny, but not in the right. Not in
they were supposed to be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do have genocide for one. So, you know, there were several TV series that their 2-hour pilots got released as TV movies. Battlestar Galactica, the original, which I have tried. I mean, I loved the show as a kid. Like I said, you know, Lost in Space, Time to All, Voyage to Planet, all of that stuff. When Battlestar Galactica came out in, what was it, 79, 78, something like that? It had to be 79 because the we had Galactica 80, which we do not speak of.
Why not? It was the precursor to Quantum Leap.
Okay.
Seriously, like the premise for that one was like, or was that, am I thinking of the right one? I'm thinking of Battlestar Earth, right? what is it? Which one is the one where they're actually on Earth?
They get the Galactica 1980. They get to Earth and they have the flying motorcycles and
but in the pilot movie, they're like going back in time to like fix shit. And Donald Belisario was like one of the executive producers. And
oh, really?
That like stuck with him.
Okay.
That's why Quantum Leap happened.
Battlestar Galactica was 1978.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, okay. Random shit gets trapped in my brain. I gotta get it out.
So anyway, you know, they released it both on TV as a made for TV movie, and it got a theatrical release. And I'm sorry, it's boring as hell. How robots destroying 12 planets of humans can be boring? This movie is just dull. I cannot. You know, I mean, Battlestar Galactica was not a good show, but by 1978 standards, it was fine. And, you know, and it was space and it was robots and it was, you know, John Colicos, which is, you know, John Colicos elevates anything he's in.
It was better than Space 1999.
Oh. I used to do a podcast called Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots,
mm-hmm.
where we went back and revisited the shows of our youth and see how they held up. And we did season one of Space 1999. And while I love the hardware, you know, the Eagle is still one of the best spaceships ever made. Oh my God, is that show depressing as hell.
Wait, so you stopped at before they got to all the weird magic and shit in season two?
We only did season one, but yeah, I remembered season two just being out there, but season one is such a bummer. But you know, I also had a huge crush on Barbara Bain, and so I
didn't know that's so fair.
However, Galactica was a bad one. The Bionic Woman was another one that Jamie Summers was one of my early boyhood crushes, and mm-hmm. Lindsay Wagner, I think, I think she was great. Having to hear Lee Majors sing was not fun. Jamie, oh my God, it still hurts. and then in kind of the vein of some of the things you mentioned, Sean, Rescue from Gilligan's Island, and then its sequel, Return to Gilligan's Island, if I'm mm-hmm. not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Those, even as a kid, I was like, oh, this is not good.
you can't forget about Gilligan's Island meets the Harlem Globetrotters.
Well, that was the cartoon.
No, no, no,
no, no.
That was a
live action thing.
That was a movie. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think it was the last one they did. Yeah.
My brain changed that then.
In Return to Gilligan's Island, because at the end of Rescue to Gilligan's Island, and yeah, I should have had every one of those on my list, but I didn't. And Rescue, because I watched Rescue so many times. And Rescue, they get stranded on the island again, and then Return, they like decided to build that damn. Yeah, hotel
a resort or some shit
on there. And then on the third one, like Mr. Howell was not there because he was too sick, and they replaced him with his son, and they had the freaking Harlem Globetrotters playing basketball against robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is something that happened.
It is. Well, and also Tina Louise wasn't in any of them because she really got bamboozled into being on the show in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the sources say this is true. I have seen a couple that were saying that she said it was bullshit, but she was under the impression when she took the gig on Gilligan's Island that she was going to be the main character. And then was very upset to find out she wasn't, but she was already locked into the contract.
I wanted to be Gilligan.
Yeah, really. You're going to be on this show called Gilligan's Island, but you're the main character.
Why am I playing that's why I have some doubts about it, but it's the Hollywood lore is that, you know, she was misled into being in the show because she had such a promising movie career. I don't know, but anyway, but all of that being said, I want to finish up with one of my favorite made for TV movies, 1978 Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna have to do that. We're gonna have to do that movie one month.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Maybe that's what we'll do this month. I don't know. We'll see.
Because if you all may know Kiss as a, you know, passing, you know, as a musical group, as, you know, the makeup and the blood, sure, and the fire and all that stuff, but
the tongue.
Yeah. Back in the mid 70s, which is when I discovered, I still remember my friend Mike Timbro introduced me to Kiss in geez, like 1973 or four or something like that. And I remember in art class, I did a what were we doing? Like collage something where you just like use a hole punch and you make a bunch of little colored construction paper dots and then you make a picture out of it. And I did the Rock and Roll Over cover, which was this big circle with the four faces. And I was just huge Kiss fan. And so when they announced they were doing a movie, because they used to do Halloween specials every year. There was Christmas specials and, you know, various Halloween or holiday specials, and Kiss was on. Alice Cooper did a Halloween special and Kiss was on. They did Detroit Rock City.
Mm-hmm.
Then they announced they were doing Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. And so in 1978, I'm nine. No, wait a minute. I was 10 in 74. So I was 15. Big difference. And I was really excited, and this was going to be so great. And I watched the thing, and my God, is it awful. It's like Sid and Marty Krofft awful. But the funniest thing I remember is even at the time I was like, wow, Gene is the only one who can act with any sort of ability whatsoever. You know, the rest of them really sounded like they were standing there going, oh no, we've got to get to the other side of the bar.
Plus they had
literally
to
that bad.
Plus they had to dub all of them. Like the whole movie was dubbed.
Well, it was shot in an old amusement park.
They yeah.
had, you know, didn't have a decent, you know, sound recording setup. But, you know, after that, Gene Simmons was in at least a couple of movies. He was great in both Runaway, the Tom Selleck robot movie. Mm-hmm. And my favorite Gene Simmons performance of all time is Blind Fury with Rutger Hauer. Rutger Hauer plays not Blind Fury.
Wanted Dead or Alive.
Wanted Dead or Alive. Thank yeah. you. Because they were very similar. Rutger Hauer plays a bounty hunter, and Gene Simmons is a Muslim terrorist who like
yeah. tries
to, you know, and basically what he same character he played in Runaway. But at the end of the movie, Hauer brings Gene Simmons in, and he's shoved a grenade in his mouth, and he's got Simmons has his hands tied behind his back, and he's got a grenade in his mouth, and Howard's leading him with the pin.
Mm.
And he's going to turn him in and get the bounty. And he's, you know, Gene Simmons has played this, you know, absolute bastard through the whole movie. And this is a spoiler for a 30-year-old B movie. So too bad.
How dare you?
And, you know, and it's like he's going to collect his money, and, you know, I don't even remember why, but the deal is not as good, or they're going to let him go, or some stupid stuff. And Rucker's just like, okay, and he pulls the pin. And
no, he was going to get less money if he was dead than if he was alive. If he was alive, he would get more money, is what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah. And by this point, he's so fed up with it, he just pulls the pin. But Simmons is not a bad actor. In the right role, and in Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, he was, you know, despite they kept, you know, making him putting all these animal growls and shit into him and stuff, and Ace Frehley had like magical laser powers coming out of his guitar, and
yeah,
Paul had the power of love or some shit like that. It was bad. Even at 15, I was like, wow, this is terrible, but I'm enjoying every second of it.
It kills me the way things come up. It's like, you know, like weird little synchronicities, because I have not seen that movie. I mm-hmm. only know it because I am a huge Foo Fighters fan, and someone watched Studio 666 and said, it's basically that movie, but with the Foo Fighters.
I want to see that. I want to see
and
that.
They were saying Dave is the only person who can act in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, the trailer looks awful, but I want to see it so bad.
It looks awful and fantastic at the same time.
Wait, I didn't know the food. I didn't. It's called Studio 666.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just came out.
They made like a slasher type like it's like an old B horror movie, but yeah. it's about the Foo Fighters going to record an album in a haunted house, and okay. and Dave gets possessed and starts killing people and stuff.
And he creates his own. His own note, it's an L note or something, and it's just it seems like crazy, and it's just apparently it winds up being one song, not even a whole album. Like, so he's just obsessed with like this one like crazy song that they've been, I don't know, and he's like killing that once they actually do their part, he keeps killing the Foo Fighters.
Yeah
like so I don't
you know that but, that Wanted Dead or Alive movie was supposed to be related to the Wanted Dead or Alive TV series from back in the 60s, the late 50s. Rutger Hauer was supposed to be playing Steve McQueen's like great great grandson or something like that.
That's weird.
Yeah, because that was a Western. Steve McQueen version was a Western, and this one took place in modern times as of when it came out, you know. So,
that's like the Green Hornet. The
crickets.
The Bill Dozier Green Hornet series. Britt Reed. He is canonically the like great grandson of the Lone Ranger.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they share the same last name. They were created by the same guy, which I guess is any Green Hornet stuff. Is the creator made him. It's in the same canon as the Lone Ranger is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. But yeah, if you like Rutger Hauer and you want to see a couple of movies where he was just having a blast doing literally B movies and just really, you know, having fun with it. Wanted Dead or Alive and Blind Fury are two brilliant examples of just Hauer having a great time doing these bad movies that end up being fun.
If you want to see a B movie where Rutger Hauer is having a good time, watch Hobo with a Shotgun.
Oh,
I think I saw that one.
That is with, I don't know if you ever saw the Tarantino Rodriguez, what was the one that had all the fake trailers? This is where Machete came from.
Machete?
No. No, that's where that came from. Was they did a bunch of fake trailers in this. Yeah, I think it was Grindhouse. They did a bunch of fake trailers in this movie, and then they ended up turning those fake trailers into movies, and Hobo with a Shotgun was one of them. Machete was one of them.
Oh, that's right. I didn't see Hobo with Shotgun. I've talked about it for years.
Yeah.
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 I've heard about it for years, and I've never seen it.
Well, my favorite line in it is, if life gives you razor blades, you make a baseball bat covered in razor blades.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look at that now.
And that was one of my favorite moments in The Mandalorian was when Danny Trejo showed up as the Rancor trainer.
Yeah,
that was just brilliant.
I mean, I loved when he showed up in Breaking Bad as Tortuga.
I always
like seeing that guy.
And then his head wound up on the back of a tortoise. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just sounds like a really cool dude who's been, you know, he's seen some shit and he's reached his zen point and now he's just having fun.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, he did several episodes of The Flash on CW. Mm. Like, it's okay.
You haven't had enough trauma.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week. I do have, I mentioned this on the last podcast that we did, which was that Super Fan Talk, I mean, that Star Trek podcast. But, and I won't go into the whole spill, but I just want to say that this month, the month of March, all the money that comes in through Patreon, I'm going to be donating it to the UN Refugee Fund, which Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds have said that they're going to match every donation that comes in up to $1 million. So it's kind of like donating twice. So if you're a patron, first of all, I appreciate it. Now, I mean, you can be a patron for $3 a month, or you can be a producer on the show at the $5 or $10 level, like Tom Corcoran, Brandon Ushio, and Dale Goodall. But this has been an unreal week as far as the news with Russia invading Ukraine And a lot of those people have lost their homes. They've lost their families. They've got husbands and brothers that are forced to stay behind and go fight in this ridiculous war that's going on right now. That shouldn't be happening, but I don't want to get too political, but if you, but I'm going to take all the money that comes in on Patreon for the month of March. I'm going to donate it to that fund. So if you are not a patron, if you want to be, go ahead and join. If you want to, do something for Ukraine, you know, donate to that fund. Or if you want to, send it to me and I'll put it in the pot with the money that I'm going to be sending this month, I can do that too. You know, just shoot me a message on Facebook or something and we'll work something out. So I just wanted to put that out there. And I'm also challenging other podcasters to do the same as well. And I know that we get these Patreon accounts because we need to cover, you know, our hosting fees and stuff like that. But, you know, once you pay the hosting fees, or I challenge you just for 1 month, just pay your hosting fees out of your pocket and just donate your Patreon money to something else. Because, you know, unless you're on some site that your hosting fees are like $100 a month for some reason, if you are, call me because I can give you better options. but yeah, I'm challenging other podcasters to do the same. So, all right. Dave, why don't you let us know where everybody can find you?
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. And if you are into the DC multiverse on film and television, check out DC On Screen. If you're into Star Trek and you know, want something other than, you know, or in addition to, I never know how to say this without sounding like I'm saying don't listen to you guys' show. But I'm on it a lot of times.
We're all friends. We're not competitors.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to do all that. Star Trek Universe podcast. My friend and I have been talking about Star Trek since we were 6 years old. And if you want to hear that continuing conversation for whatever damn reason, give us a listen over there. And you can follow me drawing and doing my artwork over at Instagram.com/drawingwithdave. And that's all the things right now that I am actively doing.
His drawings are really good.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank y'all. That's so nice. That's real nice of you.
Rick, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you?
You can find me looking shit up on Google Podcasts. Oh, there it is right there. It was the first thing that came up when I typed in Star Trek. No, that's all good. Oh, that's really? You. Okay. All good things, matriarchal societies. Is that you guys?
You have a right.
Don't you have a website?
No, wait. There, Matthew Carroll. Is that your?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's my co-host.
All right.
He hosted on.
Subscribed.
Cool, man. Thank you. Yeah, he hosts the show on his network, Stranded Panda.
Okay.
It is in association with Maladjusted.tv, which is my bullshit.
Yeah, I need a good Star Trek podcast to listen to because that doesn't involve me listening.
Well, I'll try to find you one.
you can find me on Starbase 66, the International Genre Fiction Podcast, which we are back is irregular as ever. If I get enough people to actually come on the show when I need to do a show, I may be calling you, Dave.
I'm here.
I have like eight co-hosts for this show, and I've got one who regularly is there for for recordings.
So. Yeah. Hey, you know, if I get on enough other Star Trek podcasts, maybe I'll get a few listeners on ours.
Also, Open the Iris, our Stargate SG-1 show, is back online. We just did Wormhole Extreme, episode 100 of Stargate SG-1, and we are going on from there. I have a couple of new shows in the pipeline. One is an audiobook review show that should be coming out fairly soon, kind of book club slash review. And I also have an idea for a Star Trek show that I just need to get some people involved in, which means I need to talk about it to the people I know. But I hope that this idea will be really cool. So you all will be hearing about that fairly soon. So, and also you can find me on that Star Trek podcast and the Cosmic Potato and occasionally on Captain Game Show and any other show where people aren't looking at the door closely enough before I sneak in and start talking.
All right. And if you want to know how to reach us or where you can find us online, just stay tuned and announcer Nate will tell you in just a moment. Be sure to join us next time on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, when you might hear John say, "I'm sorry I wasn't on the show. I was busy practicing how to sing as Groot."
Thank you for joining us. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Fredo's gonna leave without giving you a goodbye kiss.
Help the show grow by leaving us a 5-star rating and a review. Or support the show by visiting us at patreon.com/infinitepotato.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
Be sure to join us again soon on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast, brought to you by infinitepotato.com.
Goodbye.
This concludes our broadcast day.